A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So it's raining, it's pouring, somewhere Scott Telford is probably snoring.
Brilliant.
And this is the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I'm hosting because Scott's not here. Hello. And I'm joined today by Ash Millman.
Hello, I'm here.
And John Brown, Josh Brown.
Is it too late to leave?
No, it's not. I mean, it is, because I've closed the door. Anyway.
Curtain is not a door, and it is only half a curtain.
Look, the curtain was ripped years ago, okay? So peek behind the broken curtain here.
Very good.
We was going to record this last week, but then the last first two film, movie, HBO series, which isn't a film, got announced, and then we decided to cast it. And then guess what? Monday, we need to give Rich his shot of Doom content every now and then. Always goes feral and starts frothing. So that's why we did the podcast on Monday. So now we're going to talk about the PS2 because it's 20 years old. It came out in Japan 20 years ago. So we're just going to talk about that and go back to our like deepest memories of the PlayStation 2.
Listen, it's worth the wait because everything in good in life, the PS2 is timeless and it's still brilliant, and you can talk about it. It's just nice that it's 20 years old, but you can talk about it anytime. We've all got great memories. We've all got fun memories, probably, hopefully, unless you've got something traumatic hidden in the closet.
I looked at you so blankly then. I was like, but what?
What memories? Do I? What is the PlayStation? I don't know.
I might quickly slide in there and go with one of my traumatic memories of the PS2.
Oh, straight in there. We're going right in.
Christmas, I don't know what year it was. It was the year after the PS2 came out.
2001.
You know, I was
etched into Josh's diary.
I should have probably searched this on Wikipedia or Google, but who cares? Let's just go off the rails.
It's 20 years ago. It's 2020. The year after it first came out would be the 1 year after.
I don't know the maths. Anyway, so young Ben Roy sneaking around the house as he always does, like trying to find out what he's got for Christmas.
In my head, sorry to derail the story even more, but young Ben Roy looks the exact same as old Ben Roy. He's got the same beard and hair. Like he's not even smaller, it's just you.
I had this size head on my 3-year-old body.
I was going to say a tiny body, but Ben Roy head.
Yeah. You don't want to see me on a blonde hair when I was actually a child before it changed to brown. Anyway, enough about brown. And John Brown. So sneak around the house, trying to find out what I got for Christmas. My mum's got new places. And I find that part of the wardrobe, you can move the back, and behind that was a PlayStation 2. Lo and behold, I was like, oh, it's PlayStation 2. Here we go. New generation. My second proper console. That's all mine. What games are in there? There were 3 games in there. I forgot the third one because it's probably so traumatic. The other two, the Monsters, Inc. movie game and Donald Duck's Quack Attack.
What a great Christmas.
I was going to say.
If it wasn't for my auntie, God bless you, Auntie Sarah, then who got me James Bond 007 Nightfire shortly afterwards, I might have just thrown the PS2 in the bin.
Hang on. I think I've given your mum a bit of a hard time here because Monsters, Inc., the game, stellar, and Quack Attack, like, it's the second best Crash Bandicoot clone there was. Like, what more can you ask for?
I'm pulling my eyes out right now. Look, let's just put it this way. When I was building up my James Bond VHS collection, there were some that were purchased that didn't make the picture, you know, the nice picture that you would get with the 20. So I had to be like, say out loud one day, oh yeah, I can't wait to have this nice full picture as I displayed them in the living room. And then they, lo and behold, they were changed and I got there.
I always knew you'd be like a sneaker. I knew you'd be going raking for the hidden Christmas present.
there's absolutely a type of person who goes and looks for their Christmas presents. There is the other that receives the Christmas presents and is thankful for them in the first place, but also just has them and loves the surprise. Well, I don't get the joy of looking for
engineer a good future. Don't just wait for it to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, like, what do you get from looking for them? Because then you still have to get given them, and if you know that they're crap, you'll be like, oh, thank you. I knew this was coming, and I hate it.
I don't know. I just prepared myself for it.
As a former sneaker in like recovery now, because I still have the urge to seek out presents, but I try not to do it because there's nothing but despair once you see it. Even if it's good, then you know you've ruined a surprise, because that would be even sweeter if you got it Christmas or birthday morning, not just randomly. If you didn't know what it was and you thought, wow, you know me so well, or on the inverse, you don't know me at all, ma'am. Get out of my life.
Well, yeah, that's exactly probably what has happened now. Anyway, on a lighter note, we're going to go straight to Ash.
Oh, it's me. I don't have... the most traumatic, closest to traumatic memory I've got is my...
Could be a happy memory.
Well, I have a happy memory. I could share that one, but it leads into a traumatic one, which is my PlayStation was in a room, the designated games room, which was so good. It's when I used to... we moved house when I was a teenager, so it was like the house I grew up in. And I had like a bedroom that was like a fair size, but our loft got converted. And my dad's into games. He's into painting Warhammer models and doing all that sort of thing. So the loft was like the full length of the house. It had all of the game stuff, all of the painting stuff, all of the fun things in there. And the PlayStation 2 was up there, and that was my domain. We had beanbags, fluffy beanbags, a little mini fridge with some Cokes in. You know how rolling.
I'm envious now. Young Benbury is now envious. He's sneaking around in a wardrobe. He's listening to this. Like, what's going on?
Fully, I was living the only child privilege life.
That's like a paradise. Like.
Oh, there we go.
I honestly was. The clouds parted as I ascended the stairs. The stairs were like ladders. They were so steep. They were like a ladder. So I was actually scared to get in the loft. But once I was there, that was it. I was just stuck there all day because I can't go back downstairs. And my friend used to come over all the time, Hannah. She used to come over all the time because we'd like, you know, you hang out after school, you play games together. And we always, always used to play Gauntlet Dark Legacy. We had that on for years. It took us years to do the campaign of Gauntlet Dark Legacy. I loved it.
So not only did you have a gaming lair, you also had friends.
Yeah, I know.
What kind of childhood did you have?
I peaked so young. It's been all downhill from there.
I don't know what's going on.
That was the joys of it. We used to play Gauntlet Dark Legacy all the time. That and The Sims, The Herbs in the City. Because I used to love that. The Herbs, The Sims in the City, sorry. But yeah, those were the joys. And then Hannah had a brother called Sam. And Sam is lovely. He's a lovely boy. But he used to have a real problem with games when he got angry, where he'd just rage. So we'd sometimes just leave him on that whilst we went and did something else, like played with horses or whatever. I was a horse girl as well, unsurprisingly.
That shouldn't be a surprise. And yet, here I am.
A real deep dive into the past of Ash.
I know.
This is all the like deep sin I've tried to hide here. But yeah, I used to go and play with little plastic horses and leave Sam on the PlayStation. And one time we left Sam on the PlayStation and he was playing the 300 game or something similar. My dad had loads of Total War Rome games because he loved all that. It was something like that. And he got to one point where he got so annoyed that he couldn't get through it that he threw himself backwards. Like, he was on the beanbag and threw himself backwards going, no! And like, you heard this cry of no! And the beanbag went too far. And on this really cool, lush sofa that turns into a bed that we also had in there, because hip and cool Ash's room was hip and cool, there was like a wooden corner, and he fully smacked his head into the wooden corner. And I haven't heard a crack. I was downstairs. I haven't heard a crack like it. It was horrible. He was okay. He was fine. Just like minor brain damage, so it wasn't a big deal. But yeah, that was a traumatic memory. I was like, how can PlayStation do this? I thought you were my friend.
You mean burned very badly there. What is the Dark Gauntlet game? Because I've heard of The Herbs, obviously, because I am a cultured, you know, person. But what is that?
Gauntlet Dark Legacy let me give you its full title.
Apologies.
And respect is an old Midway arcade game that they then like ported to PlayStation. You can play it with up to four people, and it's literally just an arcade slash kill, go all the way through, collect the crystals to unlock the next domain, and you've got to defeat Scorn, the evil warlock who's trying to rise up his armies again and take over the world. But evil, so we stopped him once ever, and since then I've played it lots of times. It does not take 2 years to finish. It took me 2 years as a child, but with good memories.
I mean, it took me a year to finish Star Wars Episode 1 on PS1, so like back when you're younger, it does take quite a while to finish some games.
Hey, that's a very difficult game though.
I had never seen this game. When I had a quick Google before this, I'd never heard of it, so
yeah,
it's cool to just like bring that in there, like, oh, that was it all top down? Because I saw the perspective, like it looks high up also.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's overhead sort of thing. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Do you play Champions of Norrath on the PS2 as well?
No.
Champions
no.
of Norrath was another great one. That and Baldur's Gate as well. I loved fantasy co-op games. Champions of Norrath, Baldur's Gate, and Gauntlet Dark Legacy are all kind of the same-ish camera angle. I think Baldur's Gate is different, but yeah, kind of up above so you can see everything that's going on and your little people run around and kill them.
That sounds sick.
It was amazing. Josh, tell us a memory.
Well, my memory is now pale in comparison because unfortunately I didn't have a lavish gaming paradise. I had to share my room with my stinking brother. We had to take turns on the PlayStation.
Oh, you shared a room.
I shared a room. And also, I was one of those devils who would never put games away, so I would just leave the discs out.
Or in the wrong case.
You
could get in a bin.
If I even put them in a case, it would be the wrong case. It would just be hiding them somewhere. So obviously a lot of them got damage, which was very upsetting. But I remember one time coming home from school and whacking on the PlayStation as I often would, and it just wouldn't turn on. It did that thing, you know what the PlayStation 2 did, where it would go into the clouds of all of your saved data.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd be lucky and it would go straight to the game, and other times it would send you straight to, I think it was the memory card screen, and that would let you know that it wouldn't work. So I tried all the tricks in the trade. I remember when I had a PlayStation 1, it wouldn't never work, but it would work if you had a little bit of paper. If you ripped the paper off, put it where the disc is, for some reason that would fix it, but you couldn't do that with the PlayStation 2. And I just remember the despair, and it still haunts me to this day, coming back and just knowing that it was broken. And that's when I had to actually retire it and get an original Xbox instead. And things were never the same.
You didn't even get the next PlayStation. Oh, I didn't, and I got a slimline.
Oh, see, that was the thing. I just had to, you know, jump ship because I thought all of these memories are now tainted because broken, and I couldn't get a replacement.
We became a 2 PS2 household because I finally went no to my sister. You cannot borrow my PlayStation anymore. So my mum got her one of the super slim ones. This tiny little thing about the size of a DVD case, bright pink. I'm like, how is this a PS2? She didn't take it with her when she eventually moved out. And I went back to my home, family home before I moved away to London. And I just took the small thing and I have it in storage somewhere because it's so small and so weird.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm just going to take it for prosperity.
Oh, like years later, my sister got a little small pink one, which I loved very much. And that was awesome. I want to bring them back. I'd get a pink PlayStation 4. But yeah, like I had to share with my brother. So we had the system where it would be an hour for me, then an hour for him. And let me tell you, I've never stretched the concept of time so much as I did when I was 10 or 5
or whatever.
You get
to the point where, it's going to be 20 minutes before I can save. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I've got to overlap.
Oh, but I had to go have me tea. That was 10 minutes. You know, I had to go to the toilet. That was 5 minutes. So give me some added time and then you can go in. Come on, just let me out.
We had that with the TV. That's how I ended up watching most of Sailor Moon as a kid, because I wanted to watch Digimon, but like I said, they were around the same sort of time. There's a show afterwards, so I had to share the TV, and I was like, ugh.
Oh, I love being an only child.
You had it good.
I absolutely loved it. I did. I lived the life. I lived the life of a lord. My dad being into games as well meant that I always had like a through line to free stuff too, so it was great.
What I liked about the PS2 is like, because obviously it was so popular, it was like, it's the best selling console of all time with like 155 million units.
Mad.
And you're just like, how is that even possible? But then like, that's why we get games like, I've never heard of your game that I've already forgotten the name about now.
Gauntlet Dark Legacy.
Gauntlet. Josh, your game that I've already forgotten now because I'm a great host.
I didn't actually mention a game. I was just talking about the console itself because I have no...
I
have a game for you though, and it goes with one of my favorite memories ever. I was a big fan of the Tony Hawk's games on the original PlayStation. And when Tony Hawk's Underground was coming out, I thought that was the best thing since sliced bread, because not only was it a skateboarding game, you had no longer had like the time restrictions that you had in the older games, but you could get off your skateboard, you could jump off your board. Whoa. And this, to me, was, you know, paradoxically the most sought after feature in a skateboarding game, to not get on your skateboard.
So you see that hill over there, you can climb it.
Well, that was it. You could climb on buildings, you could hitch cars, you could do these tricks that were just not possible before because your legs were previously glued to a skateboard. And I love that game. I played that over and over again. My cousin actually got it because I used to hang around with my cousin a lot when I was a kid. It was me, my brother, my cousin, and he got it and he brought it over, and I spent the entire night not letting him have a go and completing the game. And I went downstairs and I talked to his mom, my auntie, and she said, oh, you finished it? And I was like, yeah. Has he had a go? And I was like, no, he's not had a go because I've hogged it all and it's his game. But at the same time, it was really good. So there you go.
God, evil Brown there.
I needed it. I needed the fix, you know, and I was older as well, so I could throw the weight around. I was the oldest one, so I could be like, oi, My house. My PlayStation.
I can't believe this. Here Present you go. Hunter Ben Roy and PS2 Hogger.
Ash, what you don't realise, and what you perhaps realise, is that, like, young boys in particular are terrible, horrible, awful people.
Oh, no, I knew this.
I thought you would.
When did we not? When did we stop being terrible? That's the question.
We didn't. We're still terrible now, Ben Roy. We're just in different ways.
Oh, from saying that's terrible to not terrible, like, I used to really, like, talk about Nightfire. I mean, of course, Everything or Nothing might be one of the best Bond games ever, but Nightfire was probably the golden eye of that system. For me, that was a first-person shooting Bond game with Brosnan's face, but with some... Because before that, Agent Under Fire wasn't really Brosnan. It was just like some George Lazenby knockoff. But we had Brosnan's face, kind of a weird voice, but it was like... It went all the way. It went to, like, it had space missions, it had driver missions, it had some beginning stealth sequence in a castle. There were ninjas at one point. The multiplayer was amazing. It had some great modes. And for me, that, I don't know about, like, any of you, but Nightfire for me, like, that was a game I think I played almost constantly for a year, or like at least half a year, because I, luckily my birthday is in July, so I can, like, I had, like, a nice extend. Sort of equal point to when you would then receive very new good. Stuff. And that was just a game that I remember. I always fondly remember as being like the one that sort of kickstarted me back into gaming, because I feel like I fell away like in that sort of era where I was just playing licensed stuff. And sure, Nightfire is a licensed property, but for me, like, Nightfire was just the sort of like my click back, if I wish I could click, my click back into sort of video games.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you mentioned obviously the PlayStation 2 is the best-selling console ever, and it's it had such a breadth and variety of games that I feel like I missed out on a lot of the so-called like must-play essentials. Like Nightfire, I would consider one of the, you know, canon games of the PS2. Everyone I talk to seems to have played Nightfire. All my friends played Nightfire, but I never did. I never got into it, which sucks. And it's the same with GTA San Andreas. Mm. To a lot of people, that is their childhood. That is the PS2 game of choice, and for
you
me
never played it.
I have played it, but I never really got too far into it because I would jump on and I'd do that same mission over and over again at the start on the bike, but then I'd just shut it down and boot Vice City up, because to me Vice City was my GTA game.
Yes.
Because there was such choice and there was so many good games there. Like, I feel like even though there are those canon PS2 games, everyone, like that game you mentioned, Ash, that again I've already forgotten,
Gauntlet Dragon Legacy.
Like, you know what I mean, I'm sure that's amazing, and to you that's like one of the games from your childhood, and we all have those individual ones.
Is there anything more satisfying than the Vice City mission complete noise? The
nothing in this
just
world
just warms your heart. Like, it, Tommy Vercetti and everything about that game. I can't really think of something bad about it. I mean, my last memories of it, sadly, was an iPad, because in university, I just played that game through again on my iPad, just in bed, just like, I'm just going to play Vice City again.
Well, we might have to like save this for another podcast on things that we miss, but like stuff... like cheats, you know, the idea of playing a game with cheats, because that's why I played GTA. Like, I played through the entire story of Vice City, but for me, that wasn't how you played Vice City. Vice City was messing around, putting the cheats on, and just spending hours upon hours, you know, just indulging in absolute anarchy, getting that samurai sword out, causing massive havoc on the beach, and then wondering about how your life would turn out in case, you know, you become a serial killer.
My favourite cheat wasn't actually a PS2 one, it was The Sims, but the Motherlode. I love Motherlode. Long live Motherload.
Every single person I've talked to, like, Motherload is the thing. But I always felt when I was playing The Sims, like, I don't know why I was so averse to cheating in that game.
It's like winning the lottery. You just got to make a cannon for it in your head and be like, oh, well, this is how this money came. Thank you, gifts from aliens.
That's actually saved it for me. That is an amazing way to justify it. Yeah, I won the lottery. Now I've got all this money in my bank account. I can do whatever I want.
Exactly.
One of my only Sims experience was Sims, the first Sims on PS2.
I played like dog, if I recall.
It did play a little, but when you're young, you don't know, do you? You're just a horrible kid that's searching around in closets all day with wardrobes. And
the wardrobe gremlin, Ben, is my favourite new narrative.
There was like so many wardrobes in my house for some reason. But in that one, I did in fact have James Bond and Moneypenny, and there were two people that I had in The Sims. Mm. And that was my Sims house that I focused on for ages.
Looking after your James Bond characters. Yep. Hi guys, let's give you a mother load.
Get Blofeld in there over and then.
Honestly, I wish I loved anything as much as you love James Bond. Anything in this life.
Oh, well then you see, you've got to go to Star Wars, which there were a ton of Star Wars games on there. And I love Star Wars, you know this. And obviously, like, we can talk about some bad ones. I think Bombrad Racing, like, people can love it, they can hate it. But things like Battlefront. Battlefront, when I first... I'll tell you how I got Battlefront. So it was a horrible rainy day, a bit like this now. Walking to the shops, I think I was picking up some milk for my mum after I got caught sneaking around the wardrobe. And lo and behold, there's just £40 in the alleyway.
What?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, it's raining. This wet £40.
That sounds like a trap.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It's a social experiment that I'm afraid Ben Roy.
And
do you know what I did?
Sorry, I just thought I'd spell that out.
I'm totally derailed out.
It was a trap. It's a trap. And so I found this £40, but for some reason I didn't pick it up straight away. I went to the shops, put the milk, come back, it was still there. This is all before school as well.
Hey Ben Roy, do you know what that is?
What?
It's a trap.
Whoa, didn't see that coming.
Took this £40 to school, dried it on the radiators, and then went to Game Station afterwards of all places and saw Battlefront 1 was in. I was like, what's this? And I bought Battlefront 1. And that's how I got into Battlefront series.
From drying your money on the radiators.
Drying this money that I found as a child back in like the early 2000s.
Brilliant. That you're an entrepreneur then.
Yeah, honestly.
That counts.
I turned that milk trip into gold.
Making his milk money.
If I wasn't always trying to find these presents, then how would I have ever known about it?
You know what? You're right. But for me, I was never a big fan of James Bond or Star Wars or anything like that. I know they're good games and I know people love them. And there's so many big titles, again, that we've said on the...
You can say good games are crap. Like, apparently Sekiro is great, but it's crap.
Oh, I'm not allowed to talk about that anymore.
But I'm just, you know...
Yeah,
we can like and hate our own things.
Get away.
Two nervous noises coming out of me. But no, my favourite game, it was like a fairly big one. I think most people saw it at least, was Sly Cooper.
Yes.
Sly Raccoon. Also, I think it's called Sly Cooper and the Thievius Raccoonus in America, but it's always called Sly Raccoon in my books, in my Thievius Raccoonus. And I love it. That one was my single player childhood. I've played that game a lot. I finished that game a lot. The 2, 3 and the other one are all right, but the first one is just, chef's kiss. I loved it. I loved it so much. That and Drakkhan the Ancient's Gate. I used to play all the time. Those two were like my single player ones.
That's an eclectic mix. For me, it was Sly, Ratchet and Clank, and Ty the Tasmanian Tiger. Did any of you guys play
I've
that?
I've heard the name.
All very similar. Kind of
too
like
busy playing Quack Attack.
Animal-based platformers, but they weren't sadly licensed on characters from, I've forgotten who makes Donald Duck now. Disney. Disney, yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. Sly Cooper or Sly Raccoon or Thievius.
Sly. Just Sly. Just call him Sly.
The Sly Man. Sly. Yeah, Ash, that is like, oh man,
that's
like so much of my childhood. The way that game looked to me is like that defines the PlayStation 2. I don't know why. Like I can see that, see a still from that game and I'm transported back to the early 2000s.
It still kind of holds up as well with the graphical style. Like, I remember playing that thing, it's always when you're like, the games can't look better than this. How is this is like a cartoon? And then you look back at it, sorry, it's a bit grainy now, but they all got up-res for a new generation, didn't they? The Sly Collection.
Maybe. I always play it on the PS2. I've got my little slimline one that sits under my telly that I put it back on. I played Gauntlet Dark Legacy again recently because I love that, and Sly Raccoon goes on every now and then. But it does look amazing. It very much lent into the capabilities of the PlayStation at the time, so it didn't look amazing then, but it didn't look dated either, and it's carried on now and still looks exactly the same, where it just kind of looks a little bit cel-shady sort of.
Oh, you mentioned something interesting there, Ash, because for me, the PlayStation 2 is the only like really old console that I still have that I do bust out once in a while, because I feel like, especially people around our age, to me, like that, like even non-gamers now played games back then in the sort of common ground. Like I used to bust it out. My friend Jack, every time he's had a drink, every time we'd go on a night out, if you're stopping at his, you'll go back to his and you'll rake out Simpsons Hit and Run from somewhere.
Yes.
And if it's 5 a.m, if it's 3 a.m, if it's 11 p.m, he will make you play the entire campaign after about 10 pints. And it's awesome because I love having that sort of almost relic that you can constantly pull out of the cupboard or wardrobe if you're sneaking around like Ben Roy and then
in there.
Yeah, and then plug it in and have a good time.
Yeah, it's for me, Simpsons Hit and Run and the Simpsons games, I just never got into them.
Oh, that hurts my heart, Ben Roy.
I was too busy actually murdering people in Vice City to play the Simpsons.
You had the hardcore games compared to not having Simpsons Hit and Run.
Well, Ben Roy, you are a little bit older than us. Some would say you're a very old man, but maybe that's perhaps a distinction even between this round table here, because I feel like our games skew a bit younger-ish, like whether it's like Sly Raccoon or something.
Oh, yeah, I was about 10 when I got my PS2.
Yeah.
So.
Whereas you're a bit cooler, you like killing folk. And, you know,
I got really into tactical war games, so I'd like the Ghost Recon games, even though they're on PC as well, and also Conflict Desert Storm and Global Storm. Like these tactical squad games that I really go into. Like, oh, maybe I want to be in the army. Oh yeah, I like shooting games. And you realize that it's not like that. No, you don't want to be in the army because that's a stupid thought that kids have when they're younger.
It is true. I played a lot of war games when I was younger. I thought, I could do this. This will be good.
Oh, I hated them. I always wanted to play fantasy games. I always wanted to be like with dragons and fairies and unicorns. Like I liked dark fantasy as well, like when it was a bit heavier and stuff. But I always I like swords. I just love swords. I think swords are such a nifty weapon. Yeah. I could do the army if it was all swords.
Swords for me and fantasy, I never got into it until The Lord of the Rings.
Hey.
And the two Lord of the Rings. Well, we don't count the Fellowship, whatever that was. Mm. But Two Towers and Return and the King. Did any of you love these games?
Well, I need to actually give a shout out now, because before Christmas, someone actually sent me the Lord of the Rings games on PlayStation 2, and I never got around to giving them a shout out because I couldn't find them on Twitter, I think it was. I couldn't. They left the Twitter handle, but I couldn't find them. So if you're listening to this, if there's an off chance you're listening to this, thank you, because those games are so good. The Two Towers and Return of the King especially. Fellowship of the Ring could kind of do one, but those two other games were so good and so difficult in, oh man, like so many hours playing that through those games.
I remember playing the Return of the King thing. Can games get better than this? Like, obviously, after we lost Lord of the Rings in our lives because it finished.
Yeah.
So I just kept playing Return of the King over and over and over again.
Yeah, just get anything to get back there, isn't it? It's such a nice world that they've created, and that it moves so nicely from films to the games, and it feels like you're actually in like the Jackson movies as you're doing it. Oh.
And all the special features, listen to Ian McKellen talking about how many Gandalfs there was. Like, I don't know, there's 7 or 8 of Gandalfs, because actually I'm Gandalf. And there's Gandalf in the games. Like, Ian McKellen, I love you so much.
Absolute crime that you couldn't skip the cutscenes, though. I will say that.
Yeah. Well, also, what is probably a crime on the PlayStation is the fact that it only had 2 slots. So you needed to buy a multi-tap.
Oh, what's that?
It was a thing you plugged in to get four slots on the controller.
Oh, I never did that. I always only ever played two-player games. Like, even if they went up to four, I was like, well, there is two slots and I will not use anything that does not allow two games only. Like, does not compute.
I was the exact same.
You see, well, when wrestling games were actually good, a little game called Here Comes the Pain actually drew me and my friends that you'll go to each other's houses, get some cheese toasties in, burn our mouths, and play Here Comes the Pain until the late hours of 7:30.
Mate, I'm not a wrestling fan, but those early wrestling games from Just Bring It up until, I think the last one I properly played was SmackDown vs. Raw 2007. But yeah. Here Comes the Pain was an actual moment in my childhood. Again, it was me, my brother, and my cousin. My cousin had got the game because he got every new game. And we were so sick of Just Bring It because we wanted the updated wrestlers. We wanted to see them. And I remember the night. I still remember the night he brought that game over and we finally played it, and it was like we transcended.
The pain came,
and you know what, we loved it a little bit.
Oh, here it comes.
It was just the pain. It was just
it's a trap, it was the plane.
A perfect wrestling game, sort of like a non-perfect time for wrestling, but it was just so arcadey, and just like you would pick up the controller, not like the later SmackDown versus Raw games or even the 2K games now, but you would just, anyone could just play it. I remember especially like this started with the PS1 SmackDown up until like the middle of the PS2 era. My mum was playing the Royal Rumbles. She just liked playing the Royal Rumbles. Like,
yes.
Just press, hit a few buttons, like, just batter me and just hit me out the ring. There was no technical, like, you've got to press like a combination or button bash to get them out. No, just punch them over the ropes and you can win.
They were the ultimate party games, in my opinion. Like, yeah. That was what I would play if I had friends over or, if, you know, again, I was playing with my parents because it was so easy to pick up and play and it was so fun and funny and over the top. And it was, yeah. Oh,
oh, I'm just sorry. I've had like a lightning bolt of a flashback. So I was thinking of,
oh, yes.
You know, when you, you know, when you play like PS1 games on the PS2 and you think, oh, I'm getting a blast from the past. I used to do that with Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase.
Ash.
But that was like our party game. But this leads me to the most important game of all time. Again, another one that I completed far too many times on the PS2, which is Scooby-Doo and the Night 100 Frights, which is so, so good.
I didn't play that one. Is it good?
It's amazing. I'll lend it you.
And
please,
you can
play it because it still holds up. It's another one that looks like Sly Cooper, sort of, the way that it's cartoonized, but it's great. It's so silly.
Oh, for me, it was Cyber Chase. That was like the one. And I thought I was too old by the time the PlayStation 2 games came around. Wrongfully so. I thought it was too cool for Scooby-Doo. And I feel like I've been deprived of that 1,000 Frights.
I certainly did as well, because I was all into Crash and Spyro on PS1. And by PS2, like, I'm going to play the adult games now.
Oh, no. See, I tried to do that with Spyro. I was like, oh, I'll jump in at the PS2 one. That'll get me going with Spyro. Oh, no. Oh, no. Do not do that ever. It was terrible. Went back and played all of the original PS1 ones and had the best time ever. But maybe that's, I don't know. Maybe that's just the way that it has to happen. You get the PS2 and then you learn about all the PS1 games is what it was for. At least maybe me and you.
Well, yeah. That was like the great thing about backwards compatibility, because you could like jump into these franchises and then, you know, someone around you, whether it's like a family member or a friend, would go, well, but have you played these in the PlayStation 1? Because they're much better. Then you have to go back and it's just so sweet.
I had to make sure that everyone I met played Chef's Love Shack at least once.
This has come back into the discourse quite recently, Venero. You've talked about this in the office over the past few weeks.
Chef's Love Shack was a moment in time like the PS2. No, actually, the PS2, though, you look back at it, just so many games and just had such a lifetime that I think Ash, you had a memory just came back out of nowhere.
It hit me like a bolt.
I haven't even had a chance to talk about the Time Splitters games.
Time Splitters 1, 2, and 3.
Like, we're kind of running out of time, but they were also just like, not only were they great first-person shooters, but they had amazing campaigns. And they were just fun. Like, you had a mode which was like, I don't know if everyone always could have it. You know the game like It or Tag? There was kind of like, we called it family version. So if you tag someone, then you're both it, and then you both chase them. A really cool version called Virus, which you would just play Virus over and over again. You'd set one bot as the virus, and it would eventually infect everyone until you're in a corner of the map shooting everyone until you run out of bullets, and then you just get turned into the green flame.
Did you play Time Splitters, Ash?
I played Time Splitters Future Perfect with my first boyfriend at uni.
Wow, okay.
That was our like bonding session in his grotty, horrible flat. played through Times Versus Future Perfect, and I loved it. It was great. I loved it. I didn't actually play it when I was a kid. I played it when I was like 18, and it was great.
I mean, let's finally see you played it, because Time Splitters Future Perfect, sadly, is the last Time Splitters game we've ever had.
Tragically.
I don't know why we haven't got one again, but thanks to THQ Nordic, who are just buying everyone.
Yeah.
I think they own you, Brown.
I think
that
we do,
eventually
yeah.
we're going to get at least a remake of the first three.
Bring there is, them back.
Or maybe even new ones. Give me just monkeys that look like RoboCop again, and monkeys that look like zombies, and just monkeys.
Just up res the older ones, man, because Time Splitters 1 was... I got my PlayStation 1 a bit late because I was... PlayStation 2 a bit late because I was a bit younger, obviously. And Time Splitters 1 was one of the games I got with it that Christmas, and I didn't expect to love it. To be honest, I looked at the cover and thought, what's this? I don't like this. This isn't James Bond. But then I played it, obviously, and the multiplayer is just... outstanding.
The problem with those games is some of the humor is a bit choice now, and it would have to be probably removed and things like that.
Oh, no doubt.
There were just characters like, I'm a sexy policewoman in the multiplayer, let's go. It's like, okay then. But as if all things have to end, all good things.
Aww. Can I just give a brief 10-second sure? shout out to Metal Gear Solid 2?
Oh, of course, yes.
One of my favorite games
and
of all
Snake
time.
Snake Eater.
And it was one of the games. See, for me, I never played Snake Eater until much later because I just played 2 over and over again. And it, without that game, I wouldn't be sitting here, guys. It was one of the games that got me to, that made me realize that I love this as a art form and a medium. I'm sure so many more people had that with Metal Gear Solid 1, but for me, because I was a bit younger, it took until 2 for me to realize just how good games can be.
I had that also. I remember sitting there getting my... Now I'm tangenting off the outro, but getting the edition of PlayStation Magazine was... I almost swore then. With Sam Fisher.
You swallowed that swear.
I swallowed that swear there. With Sam Fisher finally coming to PS2 after being on Xbox so long. And I was like, oh, I need this. Because I didn't really ever own the original Xbox. I only went to my friends to play the Halos and the sort of thing. But Sam, like, Splinter Cell on PS2 was...
Sam
Amazing.
Bloody Fisher, eh?
Sam Bloody Fisher.
You love to see it.
And the Silent Hill games were great as well. They were terrible.
All these like rush shout outs. Oh my god, I remember I also
Everything.
Played this game.
Also Resident Evil 4. How did I not talk about that? Okay, but we have a question, everyone.
Come on then.
Hashtag WCGP. And this question is from it's gone. And sorry, Alex, I can't see your Twitter handle or anything, Alex, because it's gone. But luckily, I have it saved on Slack. So WCGP is the hashtag question. Books are adapted for films all the time, but rarely do we ever get video games based on novels. Which book would you like to? Which book would you love to see a video game of?
Ah, see, it's a great question, but also a very difficult one, because I think that's probably the hardest way to adapt a book is to make it a video game. I don't think many are...
We don't make book lists anymore, so none of us really need to read books, right?
We don't, tragically.
Who reads a book? Not me.
I must admit, though, Fallout 3 got me to read Cormac McCarthy's The Road, because I've played Fallout 3, obviously, and I was just so ravenous for any more post-apocalyptic fiction, and I was trying to track down anything I could, so I watched all the post-apocalyptic movies, and then the one recommendation that kept coming up was The Road, and I read it and I loved it. So thank you, Fallout 3 Bethesda, for getting me into that book.
God, The Road game would probably be like playing The Last of Us on Grounded.
It'd be miserable.
Without zombies.
Absolutely miserable.
Anything
but
for you, Ash?
I'd take it though.
I have a few actual book choices. So I think anything by Stephen King would work well because you can make it into psychological horror. As a walking sim that you could turn very Blair Witch, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, I think would work quite well as like a very small novella. I think the smaller your source material, the better for making it into a game, because you want the game to do all of the talking for you. There's another one which I believe is like a gift book. So it's kind of like something you just flip through on a table, which is called The Resurrectionist. And it's... kind of like the anatomy and bone structure of mythological creatures and strange things that it's made up. And it's kind of like a mortician's handbook. I think that would be really interesting to have something where you've, like, kind of like House of the Dead, like where the book notes come up and you're like, oh, okay, here's the monster as its weakness. You could do lots of really interesting lore around that and have it as like a mythological creature sort of book. That would be good. There's also another book called Afraid by, I think, Jack Kilbourne, which is just about like... it's been so long since I've read that book, I might be making up the narrative, but if I remember right, it's like a biological weapon that kind of turns people into really aggressive killers, gets dropped onto this town, and they seal it off So you could have like a bunch of serial killers running around, and you could either be one of the people who's hiding from these horrible people and trying to get away and figure out what's going on, or one of the people actively going against them. I think that's a good story as well.
That sounds awesome. I think if I had to choose one, it would be a bit of a cheat because there have been games based on his books, but it would be a H.P. Lovecraft one. And we've had like Call of Cthulhu, and we've had games, you know, heavily inspired by the writings that he's done, but I just have like a sort of straight adaptation updated. Maybe something like At the Mountains of Madness would work very well. You'd have to heavily adapt it to make, you know, because those stories are so short, but the concepts of them, Lee, are like, because they need update anyway, because a lot of the writing now doesn't hold up, and it's very, very problematic in some cases. I think they're just actors, great bases for games, so give me more of those.
Well, I never really read as a child. I just watched wrestling and played with Star Wars toys.
Of course.
And then now the only books I ever interact with now are new canon Star Wars ones. But there is one that is also my favourite story of all the time, my favourite film. Just let's try to see if we can make a Trainspotting game. Why not?
Yeah.
Oh, that could be cool. Be like a drug runner or something. Like, yeah. I don't know. I think you could do something interesting with that, definitely. It had a good vibe to it.
It would definitely hit some headlines and be choice for some people, but I'd like to see how they would do that.
Would you play as Begbie or would you play as someone else? I mean, he's the most
interesting
character.
I'd be a squad-based going around beating up Americans on the festival days to steal their coats.
You should have like an absolutely hallucinogenic sort of dream game where you just act as someone's dream and he wakes up at the end. Like, that should be it. You could do anything with it then.
That would
like,
work.
A bit like Max Payne about the guns.
Exactly,
sinking into the floor, babies on the ceiling, fun time.
So I'd fall down a toilet.
And just like babies on the ceiling, this podcast is going to be turned off now.
Thank you.
So thanks this week for listening to the What Koch Game podcast. Don't forget, if you want to talk to us, write to us anything, it is hashtag WCGP on Twitter, or you can tweet us at WC Gaming. And also, Brown, what's your Twitter handle?
Josh Brewer 2 O's. If you don't want to message us after this podcast, I would totally get that. I would totally be okay with it, you know. Stop. I wouldn't either, probably.
Stop sabotaging the show. Ash Millman, what is your Twitter handle
it
for
is
the children?
Ash Millman.
And I'm at Ben Roy Turner. This has been a nice rainy podcast day. Hopefully Scott doesn't come back on Friday and give me a smack. Anyway, I've been your host, and I've been with these two nice people.
Thank you.
And thanks. Until next time.
Thanks for having us, Ben Roy.
Let's wait for another 20 years.
See you in 20 years, yeah.
PS2 at age 40, yeah? Let's go.
Yeah. See you guys.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.